This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.
Well, hello everyone. It is Thursday, September 14th, and I don't know if any of you know this, but it is National Cream-Filled Donut Day. So be sure and celebrate that appropriately, as well as it being Thor's Day. So be sure and catch a glimpse of Chris Helmsworth anywhere you can. So today, here on Readers Entertainment Radio, I am going to talk to one of my very favorite people in the world. I'm Patricia W. Fisher, and a few years ago, I had the fortune to get I was involved in the literacy signing for Romance Writers of America here in San Antonio, and one of the people that sat next to me was author Suzanne Farrell. So I'm just completely thrilled to have her on the show today. So USA bestselling author Suzanne Farrell discovered romance novels in her aunt's hidden stash one summer as a teenager. I hear that story a lot. Apparently a lot of people find stashes with their crazy and wonderfully flamboyant aunts. From that moment on, she knew two things. She loved romance stories, and someday she'd be writing her own. Her love for romance has only grown over the years. She is the author of 13 novels and an Amazon bestseller for both her series, The Edgar's Family Novels and Western Series. She has also won the Beacon Unpublished and the CTRWA's contest on erotic categories with her book, Surrender, of Lacey Morgan. She's working on more books for the Edgar's family, and we will talk about some of those today, a Western series. Again, we get to talk about those today. And she's, whether you're on the edge of your seat for her romantic suspense or heartwarming small-town stories, she will keep you thinking about her characters long after the happily ever after is achieved, which is the sign of a fabulous, fabulous book. When she isn't writing, she's a superstar labor and delivery nurse, loves Pinterest and 70s and 80s rock and roll. So please welcome Suzanne Farrell. Hello, Suzanne.
Hi. Hi, how are you?
I am fantastic. I'm so excited to have you on today, especially with it being Cream-Filled Donut Day, because what better day for us writers, to talk about? About writing and just the sweet treats that we get to give in our books. So I know that you have some books coming out, so let's go ahead and start. Exposed is book 5 of the Edgar series, and this is a romantic suspense, correct?
It is. It is. The Edgar's family started out with kidnapped. The sister was the heroine in the book, and she was the nurse who actually gets kidnapped out of a parking lot by an FBI agent who needs some help, medical help. And then she has three older brothers who each were featured in a book. And in the second book, Hunted, which was Matt and Katie's story, Katie is a witness in witness protection, which gets blown, and they meet the U.S. Marshal, who was her handler, who is Frank Costello. Now, Frank is taciturn at best. He's an older hero. And they just sort of adopt him into the clan throughout the next couple of books. So by the time I got done writing the brothers' books, which were Seized and Vanished, I knew that Frank needed a heroine worthy of him. And he hates photographers, absolutely hates them because they're always getting in his way, you know, when he's protecting witnesses. And so, of course, he has to have a photographer as the heroine. And she's not just any photographer. She's a fashion photographer. But her name is Sydney, and Sydney is doing the wedding photography for the youngest brother, Luke, and his wife, Abby. And when she needs to ride home, Frank volunteers. And when he gets there, her house is on fire, and then it explodes.
Okay. Bad day
and
for Sydney.
Yeah. He jumps into protective hero mode. And she quickly figures out that he will try to say as few words as possible to anything. And so she gives it right back to him. And at one point she's thinking if he could possibly, you know, communicate with one syllabic words, they were in big trouble. And I had the best fun writing those scenes where they go back and forth, and you can see he's getting tickled that she's keeping up with him. So it was a very fun book to write.
So who was your inspiration for your hero?
Oh, for Frank.
Who was your muse?
Well, mm-hmm. Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Yeah,
Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Oh, he is just, there's just something about him. And he just, the minute I started thinking about Frank and his picture hit my brain, I just knew what he was going to be like and how he was going to act. I could hear his voice when I was writing. So it was great. I don't always have that. Yeah, I don't always have that hero.
Right. But what's funny is when you were describing him, I was actually thinking of Mark Harmon as Leroy Jethro Gibbs.
Well, he might have been part of it, too. I do like me some Leroy Jethro Gibbs.
Oh, what a great show. It's fun to see that. And this is kind of a side note. You know, the guy who plays Ducky, David McCallum, was in the TV series Man from U.N.C.L.E. And when I see the movie, Armie Hammer plays that character. And I find it amusing because Armie Hammer is like 6'5", and David McKellen is like 5'6". So I always find it very amusing. So it's just kind of a side note there. Kind of my coffee hasn't totally kicked in to keep me on track here. So,
well, that's okay. I love Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh,
yeah,
I
we
do.
Have book
I
five.
I really love that.
And we've run out of siblings.
Okay, we've run out of siblings, we've run out of friends. So this is the end of this series, then?
No, it is not.
Okay.
You're
throwing me a curve. I love it.
I am. I introduced a cousin in a novella that was part of Capital Danger, which is a four-book. It's an interesting concept for an anthology. Four different authors with four different stories take place at the same hotel, with the same terrorist bad guys at the same night. And I use Luke and Abby in that, and we also introduced their cousin Zoe. Zoe's sort of the black sheep of the family. And at the end of Exposed, I've left it open that my family has decided to kind of go private in their protective services. And that is now going to let me pull in some friends that have shown up in books and some relatives and just kind of broaden their whole world a little bit.
And how do you keep track? I mean, you know, there's always people who write series. And I remember listening to Beverly Jenkins and Jackson talk about this. And it's like you really have to be specific about your story Bibles. Do you have a system that you do?
I do. As I introduce new characters, and it really comes into play with my small town series, but when I introduce new characters into the series, they automatically go in there. And if I introduce a child or somebody who has been connected loosely to the family, I go in and I put them in there and I make a note as to what book they showed up in, what they're like, maybe a personality quirk, eye color and hair color. You have to, because you can't keep them straight and you'll screw up and put the wrong one in. And you go, well, she had blue eyes in this book and she has brown eyes in that book. How did I do that? So that's one of the things an author in a series, you have to keep track of.
Right. And there's all sorts of forms and such on Pinterest, actually. I found that you can, you know, have each character fill out a form for each character when they show up, and, you know, notes, like you're saying, eye color, hair color, height, you know, phobias and fears. And even when you do keep
track, that's way more complicated
than
mine.
Right.
I have a list.
You have to. Right.
Yeah,
right.
If you don't.
Yeah, I have to have, like, each page.
and sometimes you have to keep track of the house that they're living in. Like, in Exposed, Frank is restoring a Victorian home in a part of Columbus called the Victorian Village. And so he also has a condo in Westerville, which is north of Columbus, which is my hometown, which is why I set the books there. And
Okay.
He uses that as a safe house. And he also has another safe house up in Cleveland. So all the different places I kind of have to keep track of for him, because those may come into play later on.
Well, sure.
And then,
sure, especially
then
if you're going private.
Right. And then in the small town series, not only do I have to keep track of the characters from book to book, because they keep showing up in the books, and who they're related
mm-hmm.
to. But my readers help name the places in the town. So I have to keep
okay.
track of the places in the town and who the proprietors are. Like, we started out with the, well, can we switch over to that series? You
right.
want to talk about that other series? Okay.
Yeah,
in
let's
Weston,
do it. Yeah.
It's not actually a Western. It's the town is named Weston, and it's a made-up town in Northeast Ohio. Well,
okay.
It's Northeast Central Ohio. It's kind of like between Columbus and Cleveland. There's an Amish community, a real Amish community in that area, and I kind of based my town on the outskirts of that. And
right.
in
okay.
that, the place where we get most of the gossip is from the Peaches and Cream Cafe, which was my original
okay.
name for the cafe. Well, I decided when I started adding more places for people to have businesses that we should have in unique names. And we started with the salon, and I asked my readers, I said, okay, I want to name the salon something cute, but we can't use the curl up and die, because I'm pretty sure that was in like Steel Magnolias or something. So we couldn't use that
I
one.
Think,
so
I
they
think
came
you're
up
right.
with
something. Yeah.
Yeah. They came up with this whole list of names, and I picked three that I liked. And then they on Facebook get to choose the one that they like of the three I pick. And we came up with the Die Right Hotel Salon, D-Y-E. And then we came up with the Petal Pushers Florists. And my
okay.
The Knobs and Knockers Hardware Store, which I think is a hoot. That's just about the funniest one. And we came up with, I think, the Greasy Monkey Car Repair, and oh, the Yeast and West Bakery.
Okay.
So trying to keep track of these and make sure those places appear in the books and who's the owners, and, you know, it's a hoot. It's fun. And you have to keep track of who the mayor is and who the town council is and all the different characters that pop into it. If you don't, you're going to get lost when you're building a town.
Yeah.
It's important.
Well, and also readers, they know. I mean, they
oh, yeah.
remember.
They pay attention.
Yeah,
and they're
they do. They
no,
do,
and
you're building
fun.
This town for them. Yeah. When you go, so I know that you are on Pinterest. When you are deciding these things for these different businesses and such, do you go on Pinterest and kind of look around and see what you think you might? I mean, things that inspire you for certain places. Or,
I am.
I mean,
do
you
do.
Look? Yeah.
Well, when I'm on Pinterest, because I build up storyboards for me,
right,
and for my so my readers can kind of see what I'm thinking. And when I do the Edgar's books, they take place in real places, really in Columbus and in Cleveland. I haven't gone down to Cincinnati for that series yet, but what I do is I go on and I find places that I remember or I've been to on research, and I'll get pictures off the internet from their sites. So if my
okay.
readers go and click on that, this place gets the advertisement, because they'll go over there and look around, and then they can see. And then I try and use actors or actresses or even models that are similar to what I'm visioning the hero or heroine to look like.
Okay, okay.
And
but,
then
so,
when
and,
the board
and,
is ready, for the readers to kind of go on there and take a look around.
Okay. Well,
and
has
the board
there
is
been
never ready
after,
to have a cover.
Oh, I see. So you don't even release it. It's like a big surprise.
Right. Once I have the cover and I have the board ready, I'll put it out. It's before the book comes out, but it's kind of a
sure.
pre, hey, this is what you're going to think about when you see this book.
Fun. So do you, is there a actor or actress that you really want to put in a story, you know, muse-wise, and haven't yet? Like you're, it's like sitting there, but you can't. You're thinking of a story for that person.
No, I usually let the characters tell me who they are. I know that just sounds bizarre, and if you're not a writer, people are like, huh? But the characters sort of walk on and say, hey, here I am, and when am I going to get... I wrote a character into Close to Home, the first book in the Weston series, and his name is Cletus. Mm-hmm. Cletus is a very gentle, big man, and he's a deputy. And I just thought of him as a secondary character that might wander in and out of the story, sort of like Barney Fife on steroids. And my readers started sending me emails wanting to know when Cletus was going to get his story, and I kept thinking, his name is Cletus, people. I don't know that I can give you a whole... Well, then he gets... I thought, well, okay, let's give Cletus a little heroine. So he gets a little heroine named Sylvie Gillis. And Sylvie's tiny. And she's got spiky red hair. And she is the... she works at the Dyerite Salon. She's a little stylist over there.
Okay.
And I thought, well, I'll just dram this through a few, you know, stories and they'll have a happy ending. Well, I got offered to do a third Christmas novella in that series.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, who better than Close to Santa's Heart will let Cletus be Santa, because he'd been doing it in a couple of the other books. And Sylvia plays his elf. And so that was a fun. He could carry a novella, you know. So sometimes I don't use the muses to get my characters, but sometimes my characters, as I'm developing the views of who they might be, pops into my head. And then sometimes they're just Cletus, and you just have to go with it.
isn't it fun? Is, you know, you're writing these books, and people, like you're saying, they write to you and say, but where's so-and-so story? And it's not anything you even considered.
Oh, the things people want to know, you know, it's like, was this one getting a story? Is that one getting, I'm like, I hadn't even thought about that character getting a story. So I have now learned to be very careful what I name people who might actually, you know, I just put a character in this new book that's coming out in October, Close to Danger, which is part of the Weston series. And I put a character named Earl in the book. Now, Earl is not going to get his own book. However, I do have plans for Earl to have a happy ending at some point. He's a homeless man. And Earl is, at first I thought, again, he's going to be just kind of this throwaway character. He actually does something important in the book. And as I wrote him, the more I write him, the more I just think he's just special for the town. So I hope my readers don't want his whole, because he's not getting a love story. He's just getting a happy ending at some point.
So would you say he's like an Andy Griffith, like Ernest T. Bass? He's that guy that everyone wants a happy ending for, but he doesn't necessarily carry a whole story.
Right. He's not going to carry a whole story, but he's going to have a really interesting happy ever after. I'm not going to tell you the details because I want it to be a surprise for my character, my readers, but my critique partner and I met up in RWA this year in Orlando, and we had kind of a long talk about it. We talked about Earl, and she came up with some great ideas for what I could do with him. So I really like the way that's going to go, but that's going to be at least in another book or maybe two.
Okay. So you bring in the Christmas anthology, and I love this because are the Christmas novellas. You've got Close to Santa's Heart, which you just mentioned for Cletus, Close to the Mistletoe, Close to Christmas, and let's see, those are the three, and then you have Close to Danger, but the Close to Christmas leads into the Close to Danger, and that's a full-length book?
It is a full-length book. When I wrote Close to Christmas, I left a very big question mark and hook for my characters, Wes and Chloe. She is the sister of the deputy who marries the sheriff in Close to Christmas. And we take up timeline-wise. Now, I wrote the book almost 3 years ago. Then I wrote two more novellas, and we twisted them around so that timeline, as if you go timeline-wise, Close to Christmas would be the third incident that happened during that Christmas period. So it's why we put the novella out in the, or the anthology out the way we did. And then Close to Danger comes back timeline-wise 2 weeks after Close to Christmas ended. So my readers who have been going crazy wanting that story are finally getting that story, and it's 90,000 words. I'm hoping they're really going to like it.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you wrote 90,000 words, I would absolutely read it.
Well, it's got suspense, but it's not just a straight suspense book. You have to bring into the small town, which is more of a little bit more laid back than my other series as far as intensity usually.
Okay.
Except we went ahead and had, you know, bad guys and a blizzard and all kinds of fun things.
Sounds tremendous. So your Christmas novellas come out when?
It is on pre-order now at Amazon, iTunes, and Kobo. For some reason, Barnes & Noble won't let me make it a pre-order there. And then it will release October 1st. And the other book, Close to Danger, is at my editor's now. Once we get that back, and we're hoping around the 9th of October it will come out. So they're going to be boom together.
Oh, so pretty quick. Okay.
Well, hopefully people get to the end of the anthology and say, oh, I have to read the next book and here it is. So we're hoping that's the way it'll work.
And here it is. So when you are not a fantastic writer and you're writing all these wonderful stories, you are a labor and delivery nurse. And I see that you have delivered over 200 babies.
I have. Now, I'm still technically a nurse, but because I'm so busy writing, I've actually retired from nursing.
Well, there you go.
So
well, congratulations
we're
on
finally,
that.
I'm very excited about that. But, you know, that was a wonderful, wonderful part of my life. I still hang out with nurse friends and talk with them. And I, you know, I miss taking care of patients because, you know, labor and delivery, sometimes you get the best bar stories from labor and delivery cases.
Yes, you do.
I've had people, you know, pray them out, sing them out, cry them out, cuss them out. You know, that's just the way it goes.
True.
But
true. And I'm sure you've seen so many different situations.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and I'd say last count we were at, I think, 223 that I had delivered myself, that, you know, the doctors couldn't quite make it in there fast enough. And
yeah,
the good thing about
very
that
unpredictable.
The good thing about that is if they're coming out that fast, there's usually not a big problem. It's the ones we couldn't get out that we had the major problems with, so.
Right. Did you find that when you were in labor and delivery, from when you started as a new, you know, nurse in that unit, and then from where when you retired, what did you see was the biggest change in that, or was there? I mean, was it pretty consistent?
Oh, well, you know, after 34 years, there's a lot of change takes place. I mean, it's
sure.
My job as a labor and delivery nurse is really twofold. You have one of two things you're going to do: trying to keep the person pregnant, you're trying to get their baby delivered. That's it. But there's 9 kabillion things that go in there, and a line I always say to new nurses and friends and anybody that'll listen is, you know, pregnancy is natural. It's not normal. So anything can happen.
Right.
And some people do well with it, and some people's bodies just don't know how to handle it. So there's some things stay consistently the same. And then the new technology comes along that lets us deliver younger and younger babies, which means we need to keep mothers pregnant as long as possible in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time there was the multiple babies where high-risk docs would get them pregnant with 3 and 4 and 5 babies, and then we'd have to figure out how to keep them pregnant.
Right.
There's a lot of new technology. The internet has helped and hurt. Helped as in people are not coming in completely clueless as to what's going on, and hurt because sometimes they think they know more, and that can sometimes be a problem. When I started out, Lamaze was very big. very rarely got epidurals, and sonograms were a rarity. Nowadays, people have two and three, at least one sonogram during the pregnancy, usually two or three or four. Back then, mm-hmm. you only had it very rarely.
Okay.
And the stress level on the nurses, I think, is high. That is a very high-risk area. Even mm-hmm. if you're a low-risk patient, the stress for the nurses, the fetal monitoring, and all the technology they need to know. When you're in labor and delivery, you are not only a nurse, but you have to be an ER nurse, you have to be an OR nurse, you have to be a clinic nurse, you have to sometimes mm-hmm. fill in for the doctors if there's no doctor in the building. You have to kind of figure out what's going on before you call them. You
right.
have to be a psych nurse. You have to be a postpartum, post-surgical nurse. You have to be a phlebotomist, and you have to be able to start your own IVs. I mean, there's like 10, 12 different hats that a labor and delivery nurse has to wear. So they all earn the money they make, and they are all wonderful. I mean, nurses cannot possibly earn what they deserve. There's just no better people in the world than nurses, in my opinion. Well, maybe romance.
And writers. You've had that's true. Romance writers are very high up there. But have you've had aspects of medicine and such in your books? Have you pulled that in?
I try to keep it from a field nurse's perspective.
Sure.
Of how things happen. And I think one of the things I recognized with nurses, really good nurses don't panic. They,
mm-hmm.
at least you don't see them. Their wheels on their head may be going 9 million steps ahead, but they have to keep they're like the duck on the water, you know, smooth sailing on top and their feet paddling like crazy on the bottom. And
sure.
good nurses are critical thinkers. And I try to put that in my heroines, that they don't just do bizarre things. They try to have skill sets. With Sammy, she's kidnapped. And she doesn't wake
mm-hmm.
up. Well, in the opening scene where she's waking up and realize she's kidnapped, she's trying to keep her panic level low. And she does real well until she recognizes how much blood she's smelling. And as a nurse, that's a scent you never forget. When not a little bit of blood, when you're standing in a lot of blood, you know the smell of it. And
right.
I tried to convey that, but also tried to convey her trying not to panic, trying to think logically of how best to handle the situation and handle who it was that had her and what was going to happen with her. And, of course, as she quickly learns that he's not a horrible person, he's just desperate, she's able to work with him.
Right. And that's huge. I mean, I think you want to stay consistent and true to the actual character of who someone would be. And, you know, you're right. Nurses really do have to think on their feet no matter what unit you work in. It's a big deal. So we've got about minute, 30 seconds left. Tell me what's coming up in 2018 for you.
Well, we're going to go back to the Edgars family. I've been invited to write a pirate novella, which I kind of went, I know nothing about pirates, and I know nothing about. So we're going to make it a modern-day undercover assignment for somebody.
Okay.
And then
okay.
Once that's done, we are also going to go up to Cleveland and return to meet Brianna, who was actually a victim in Vanished and a friend of the heroine, and police
okay.
officer Aaron Jeffries. And they are going to be in a book that is tentatively titled Drained.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And,
so it's busy, and it just kind of keeps going, right?
Right. We've got to go from one series to the next. And then I'm also working mm-hmm. on, I have a small historical series, and we're going to kind of work on that. We may have a third book in that series. We may not. It may be 2019 before that one's done.
Okay.
I tend to write two things at once. So.
I know the feeling. So thank you so much for coming on today, Suzanne.
Thank you for having me.
You look for her. Sure. I've got her links up on the blog post for Facebook, for Twitter, Pinterest, and you can also peek at her at Romance Bandits. She's also at SuzanneFarrell.com. That's SuzanneFarrell ferrell.com. And it is going to be been great talking to everybody. So go read something fun. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.